Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG. Tonight we will be reviewing, I'll give my thoughts on the Ted K movie. I didn't know it was out, but it's been out since February, and I wasn't aware of it, February 2021, and somehow, I don't know, it's hard to actually search for the movie on the internet, and because Ted K, and you get Google results for other things, but I wanted to know about the movie. And so I kind of missed it that it was out, and now I've watched it. It's an interesting movie. There are divided opinions on the chat. Ty Rogerson, I see that you fixed your nickname. That's great. It works. It seems to work here. He says, glad to see you're reviewing what is I found to be a decent film. I agree with this. Lappitop says, I was disappointed in the movie, found it boring. I was more engaged watching the documentary and TV series about him. I also agree with this. I think it's a decent movie, but I think it misses capturing the full breadth of the quality of arguments of Ted Kaczynski. Because when I read Ted Kaczynski, I see an analysis of society that explains the mechanism through which humans are threatening the Earth. I didn't see this in the movie. And as someone points out, it's kind of bizarre how the movie turns into an incel angle on him. So he's kind of an incel terrorist. So you watch the movie, you get a fair representation of some of the views of Ted Kaczynski, but when you read him, you see him explaining how he attains these views and how he thinks he can prove that society is headed toward a wrong direction, a self-destructive one. I didn't see that in the movie. In the movie, what you see is, okay, this guy likes nature. He's very pissed that there are ski-doos motorbikes around his little cabin, and he's attacking these people, and he's shooting with a gun at helicopters and planes, not touching them. And then he starts bombing people and killing people. What we see, and then he gets arrested all of a sudden. What we see in this movie is a psychopath incel who just likes nature and wants his stuff published and succeeds at getting it published through threats. It's a little lower than what Ted Kaczynski is, because when you read Ted Kaczynski, you realize he has a whole understanding of the theory of evolution, of transhumanism, of technology, and how it relates to humans, and how societies that use technology have outcompeted others. This is all missing from the movie, and so you end up with a feel-good movie about just a mood movie. It's about the mood of Ted Kaczynski, and that makes it incomplete in my view. I think that a better ode to Ted Kaczynski was warranted. But of course, in today's world, everyone wants the incel terrorist, and so there you go. They serve to the normies the incel terrorist that they wanted to see. MicroStrategy sued by DC Attorney General for tax fraud. That is an important news. Before I start talking about my review, I will also be talking about the chapter 2 of Ted Kaczynski's Anti-Tech Revolution, Why and How, a book by Theodore John Kaczynski. Someone talked to me about it on Discord and wanted my views. I will be commenting on it. MicroStrategy sued by Washington, D.C. Attorney General for tax fraud. And they are both suing the chairman, Michael Saylor, and MicroStrategy. This is the left of D.C. going after the guy who has resigned as CEO of MicroStrategy very recently. I didn't know exactly why he was resigning, but I didn't take issue with this. But now I understand perhaps he was resigning because he knew that these charges were coming. So what did Michael Saylor do? Well, he's been accumulating Bitcoin. Now, if he hasn't sold those Bitcoins and if he's still holding them, that shouldn't be a problem. But if he is, if he has sold them and used the money, which I don't think he did, but it seems to me that if you just accumulate Bitcoin, you are not subject to taxation. So it's very weird that there's a claim here that basically he has made false claims, that he has been benefiting from income that he didn't report. And it seems to be at the DC level, the DC income taxes. So basically, the whole case relies on arguing that Michael Saylor was acting as if he was not living in DC, but he's been living in DC. Very bad idea to be living in DC if he does do that. But that's the whole problem with having buildings and being present in physical places. It's really, eventually the state will go after you. So we've had Michael Saylor, we've heard him many times in the last few years say that bit the big advantage with Bitcoin is you can reappear anywhere in the world, and you can suddenly be in Thailand, and you can suddenly be in some other country and try to tax that, he said. So basically, Michael Saylor has been admitting publicly that he was that Bitcoin was an efficient means to evade taxes. Let's see if he can walk the walk now. Will we see him reappear in some other countries and continue his internet presence? More and more, the American police has access, along with the international police, Interpol, has access to finding you in any country. So can Michael Saylor make it out, or will he fight this in court, or will he disappear? I don't know. But MicroStrategy has been losing some stock value as a response to this case. Sliced Bread says, Jeff, DNA is like a code, right? How has the environment know how to read it correctly? If DNA is in C++, how did the environment know that and didn't make a mistake and read it as Java? Those are loose metaphors that you're working with. Where do I begin? I mean, ultimately, the answer to your question is the revolutionary phenotype. If you do not understand the selfish gene and the re revolutionary phenotype, you are walking blind in a dark forest, and it doesn't even matter that it's dark because you're blind. The first step is to understand the selfish gene. The second step is to understand the theory of phenotypic revolution. And then you'll realize that replicators naturally, well, naturally, what do we know from the selfish gene? The replicators, they modify themselves to survive better. Now that already gives you a cue about what could be the mechanism that leads to stable encoding. Because it doesn't have to be the case that throughout life the DNA code has always been interpreted in the same way. Interpreting DNA in the way it does right in the way we do right now is an efficient means to produce proteins that will allow you to survive. But that doesn't mean that it was the same code 4 billion years ago. In fact, we know from Tango DNA RNA viruses that there are alternative codes, alternative readings that you can do of DNA and RNA codes. And those are alternative routes that viruses use. And that's partly why viruses can hurt you a lot. It's because they get in your system and they produce other proteins with other encoding schemes, with other tRNAs that read the code differently. Now, so from the selfish gene, you get the idea that, well, a fitter life form will outcompete others. So as soon as there was one way to read DNA that outcompeted the other way, that way won. And so it can all start very simple, where a DNA segment could have been read in some unreliable ways with some errors. There might have been extremely high numbers of errors in the early transcriptions of DNA, but eventually a stable and more stable and more stable reading of DNA evolved through natural selection. On top of it, add the theory of phenotypic revolutions. Not only is it expected that a code would stabilize simply because it's better than having no code, you know, the more a life form evolves, the more there is knowledge in its genes. And the more you pay a price if you don't read them correctly. So with time, you had an increasing precision of the reading of a given replicator simply out of competing matters within natural selection. Now, on top of it, you add the theory of phenotypic revolutions. The theory of phenotypic revolution shows that if your molecule is less reliable and your code, your genetic code, is less reliable than some other available molecule in the environment, a life form will converge toward exporting its own code into the superior code. And that's how DNA evolved through phenotypic revolution. That's how RNA evolved also. They were better holders of the code. So it's not always been the case that DNA was the code and that the current way in which it is interpreted was the center of life. Before DNA appeared, there was a less efficient life form. And before RNA appeared, there was a less efficient life form. Codes build themselves progressively in life through outcompeting the other life forms, either through phenotypic revolution or regular evolution. Now, you have to understand something. There's nothing special about a code. The way the tires of your car react to the road encodes a binary sequence of, oh, here's a little bout of asphalt, and oh, here's a micro hole of 1 micrometer, and oh, here's another bout of asphalt, and here's another micro hole of 1 micrometer. All of this creates signals of heat in your tires that no one will ever give a shit about. And yet it's as binary as the freaking codes that runs in my CPU right now. All this to say that the physical universe is filled with codes that you don't give a shit about. And there's nothing special about it, and it doesn't imply a god, in case that's what you're implying, because I know where this argument is headed. You are like, oh my god, life is so complex, a code. There's a code in literally every physical interaction that has ever happened since the beginning of the universe up to the end of time. There are freaking codes everywhere, and it's a matter of how fine will someone care, to what extent will someone care about taking the information, someone or something will care about taking the information from that code and doing something with it. Obviously, human programmers do, because they want to create a good program. But life also does. Life cares about how the message from the past generation will be interpreted, because interpreting that message turns out to be the best way to survive. And that's a direct consequence of natural selection. So yeah, Ted K, the movie, let's go back to my critique. A acceptable movie, a mood movie, but that doesn't capture the philosophical greatness of Ted Kaczynski. So overall, a 7 out of 10, because they were honest, they have taken the words of Ted K and the historical report that is this movie is fair. It is all facts, most of it. The vast majority that I can verify, at least. So they were honest to the true story, but somehow they weren't intelligent enough to know how do I take the intelligence of Ted Kaczynski and make it sweat through the movie. And that makes it an incomplete movie, in my view. Ted K misses the mechanistic analysis level of Ted Kaczynski, and we are led to believe that he's just a guy in some shack begging money to his mother to commit terrorist actions. Sliced Bread responds to my critique of the code DNA. He says, "No, I wasn't going for God." So is it a bad analogy to call DNA code? Well, again, it's are you willing to call everything that has information in the universe a code? Because that's what you would have to do. Now, for someone like me, it's not a problem because I know what information theory, I know the view of physics based around entropy and quantum mechanics and the general theory of fields. So I know what information and codes are. But if you don't know, and that's why I rarely use the word, it's because I know there's a lot of people out there who don't understand what a code is. A code implies a message. A code implies, therefore, that there is a sender of information and that there is a receiver of information, and that they have pre-agreed to interpret the message and that signal in a certain way, such that it means something for the sender and it means something for the receiver. Therefore, you are imbuing the physical universe when you say that is a code. You're imbuing it with conceptions from intentional human communication. Now, when you are doing this, you are wrong. The DNA code exists as a sequence of information within the universe, but not one that was intended by a sender and not one that was understood by a receiver. It only deploys itself in the universe in a way that makes you feel or look like that it might be a message, but it's not a message in the human sense of it. He says a code implies decoding, no? Not necessarily. A code could be sent by a sender and never be received by a receiver. But this is all the baggage that comes with the word code, which is why I'm not using the word generally, except if I talk about the genetic code, because it's simply how it's called in biology. But you have to understand that when you use the word code, you are importing a baggage that comes from multiple different definitions of the word. And if you are speaking with someone like me, a refined, an erudite biologist, doesn't matter because you won't fool me. But the problem is when you speak to a general public, a lay audience who gets these senses of code, kind of they feel it, but they don't fully understand it. That's dangerous because you're going to mislead them. And this is exactly what the creationists are doing. They are equivocating on the various definitions of code. And so suddenly, first, a code is just physical information with some processing, so decoding. And then suddenly, oh, then there's God, there's a sender. Someone has to send a code. A programmer must have been there to program the code. Well, no. No. If you want to call DNA code, it's a code without a thinking sender, and it's a code without a thinking receiver. However, it is still a code that is sent. It's sent by previous generations to the next generation, and it's the most packaged version of the set of things to be deployed in the universe to survive better than most people, than most others. And it's a highly efficient packaging. Ariel Suarez says code, in the most general sense, just means information or data. Both terms can be interchangeable. Absolutely. Ariel Suarez says a programmer doesn't even have to be a conscious being. Yeah, that's true. You can have self-generated code. You can have arbitrary code. You can have arbitrary logic tables drawn at random among various possibilities. So, But generally, interesting code will have been imbued with a human intention. And that's the equivocation fallacy that the creationists are relying upon when they use that argument to justify God. So, chapter two of Anti-Tech Revolution, someone came to the Discord and said, JF, can you please review chapter two of Kaczynski's book? What I am curious about in particular is your opinion on making that kind of direct comparison between biological organisms and human organizations, on assumption that evolutionary pressures in some form apply on both. So this chapter two, I read it today. It's an excellent chapter. And again, you see Theodore Kaczynski's superior ability to understand at many levels, systems, ecology, selection, biology, mathematics. Ted Kaczynski is a superior intellect. And in this chapter, he uses his own words. I would use different words than what he used, but he comes at a very similar idea. And in fact, he does mention natural selection, but he comes to explain natural selection with different terms as it applies to his analysis of society. So instead of talking about organisms and groups of organisms, he talks mostly about systems, self-propagating systems that he calls them, which include life, but could include other things. And he talks about subsystems. So for example, a self-propagating system would be, say, the WEF, the World Economic Forum, and all of the globalist ideas, let's say. Now, this system has subsystems. It has little guys working for it. It has nations that are subordinated to it. It has politicians sympathetic to it. And then it has whole populations potentially playing the game of globalism or rejecting it. So those are the subsystems of a higher self-propagating system. And you can think of larger systems like ensemble of nations, alliances, etc. All of these form self-propagating systems. And he thinks very much that he thinks in line with biology that ultimately the systems that win is the system that can self-propagate better than the others. There is, however, a deep problem with the chapter, and it leads him down a bad path, in my view. There is a double definition that he uses for self-propagating system, and that it has two components. He says self-propagating systems, as he defines them, he wants them to include life. So, of course, things that replicate will be part of it. So self-propagating system, he says, are things that either replicate or expand. Now, it may seem like a little, is it really that grave? Yes, it is that grave. Because if you have this or in your definition, then you're really talking about two different things. There are the systems that replicate, and there are the systems that expand. And what Ted Kaczynski fails to capture is the importance of this difference. A system of thought like the WEF or globalism as a whole is one of those systems that expands, maybe, but doesn't quite replicate. And this is so important because it's at the heart of my big contribution to science with the revolutionary phenotype. To understand that memes are just memes, bro. That they fail at reproducing, and therefore they are not in a Darwinian struggle with us. So this leads him, his analysis leads him when he changes from biological organism to societal ideas and alliances and political groupings. It ends up leading Ted Kaczynski to foresee a global domination of, let's call it industrial technological globalism, okay? Because it's really large, but basically he expects a Because there is transportation across the planet, He expects a force of kind of what we would call today globalism to overtake the entirety of the planet. The problem with thinking of ideas as placing them in the same category as living things is that it fails to realize that the NATO alliance of today is not the NATO alliance of 50 years ago. And if globalism as an idea was to overtake society and expand an empire over all of Asia, Russia, America, Europe, and Africa, it wouldn't be the same globalism as today. It would be localized in all sorts of complex ways, such that, I don't know, would say globalism takes over the world in 2050. Will the average African then that adheres to globalism have the same ideas as Klaus Schwab? I don't think so. Because these systems that expand, and they only expand, but they don't reproduce, they fail at the Darwinian struggle because of something that I've said in the Revolutionary Phenotype, they end up getting reprinted out of existence. In other words, Klaus Schwab's idea, whether they lead to a global empire or not, people will slowly reject different aspects of these ideas as they find them not useful to their own existence. And eventually, your own existence becomes centered around competing with the local forces that are attempting at they are attempting to slow down your reproduction, basically. And so in India, reproducing may mean, you know, find water and find a familial relationship to allow your children to have a good sexual mate. In Canada, it may mean combat the winter, the cold of the winter. And because all of the needs are different across the planet, a global ideology that simply expands and gets more coverage and more coverage would be eventually dismissed by local populations as their struggle against each other comes to be at the forefront of their Darwinian concerns. So because people are free to adhere to an empire, join a political alliance, or not join it for real, or say that they joined it and then forget about it, because people can profess principles without even living by them, the expansion of ideas has really zero biological meaning other than as tools for reproduction. And what determines the direction of the world, ultimately, therefore, is reproduction and its local competitive needs. Now, this can get big and it's a complex thing, it's a complex game. But really, no one is playing the game of global dominance biologically. You only have a bunch of deluded fools who think they can impose a meme on the entire world, which has not been done yet fully. You know, there's still not an idea that I know of that penetrates the entirety of society across all countries and all cultures. Like, I'm talking here about political ideas of some kind or models of life or principles of economics. So what does that mean then? Is Ted Kaczynski wrong about everything? No. His analysis of systems that keep taking more and more resources is true for life. It's just not true for human politics, I think. And I think that's what he gets wrong. Human politics can have ups and downs, but ultimately it will always evolve to serve the genes. And therefore, it will always evolve to serve the highest breeding populations, which may or may not be white people at any given moment in history. But that's what it is. So he ends with a comment that is absolutely destructive on the kind of leftist naive environmentalism. Totally destroys solar power, in my view. And I had forgotten about this. But I had forgotten to think about this, but he says one of the fundamental problems with solar power is that it competes with plants for space. And he's absolutely right. You know, every single solar power that you put up is depriving the world of some grass and some trees and everything that could have grown there. And when you think about it, keeping trees from existing, when in fact trees are taking the CO2 from the atmosphere and getting it into solid form, may not be the cleverest thing to do. He's a guy with environmental concerns, but also with such a contrarian nature that he's completely able to see through the left bullshit on this. DK Shadow says we can put solar panels on barren land or deserts. Yeah, we can, but to a certain extent. But then you have to pay the cost of transporting electricity. And who knows, you know, he's also talking about so many other problems with solar panels, such as the mining that they require. But, it truly limits what the solar power dream could be for the future. Sliced Bread says it's also more reliable. You see it just as well in direct sunlight as you do in dim light. Try seeing something in direct sun on an LCD. It also doesn't distract the circadian rhythm by shining light into your eyes. E-ink only bounces what is naturally in the surrounding. It doesn't shine itself. Okay, bro, okay. He's making the apology of e-ink. The kind of Amazon Kindle type of screens. I've been trying these screens. I've not been super charmed by them. They kind of suck. I'm okay with getting a little bit of light from my screens. And, you know, compared to the irradiation machines that were my grandparents' TVs, on which we were all sitting in front, and there was this big analog tube that was just projecting electrons in our face or whatever it was doing. I think that LCD is pretty fine. Let's not forget that LCD, while illuminated, is still a bunch of liquid crystals that melt precisely. And I want the extra light at this point. I'm happy with LCD extra light. Mama JF is coming. What is up, Mama JF?
Hey, hello.
Hello.
Yes, I just want to say something.
Yes.
Because I watched a lot of video about the regenerative system.
Oh, yeah.
And because the problem about the carbon is not so much that we use too much carbon, but because we should put it back in the earth.
Yes.
And when you do regenerative system, with the cover crops, okay, this puts so much carbon in the soil, and actually the plants need a lot of carbon, because they take carbon and they make nitrogen.
Make nitrogen, maybe, but they certainly make O2. They make oxygen.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. And what I want. Oh yes, and you know what? Even the people that I listen to, they are fighting now to get the government to give them money because they put back carbon into the soil.
Yeah, well, you know, put your carbon into the soil if that's your hobby, but I won't pay you for it, you know.
I know, it's kind of weird. I kind of felt a bit weird about this.
Yes, because
everything about government is weird.
Yeah, it ends up being a system of exploitation, and basically they want to be paid for dropping accidental bouts of piss on some land and claiming then that the CO2 will be reabsorbed by it.
No, they say if you plant the good plants with the government, like if you do cover crop with the mustard and everything, and the government gives you money.
Yes.
In France, so they do that.
The problem is that if the government starts accounting who puts what back into the earth, they're of course going to miss the calculation. They're not going to include Papa JF's carrots. And yet Papa JF's carrots are made of carbon, and they, as far as I can tell, they have breeded those carbon atoms from the air.
Yes, but yes, that's just what I wanted to say. It's just, it's not so much the problem that we use carbon, but the problem is that now we do the CKP and we put a chemical fertilizer. But actually what we should do is put carbon back into the soil.
Absolutely.
That's what is missing. And that's why we have environmental problem.
Absolutely. I agree. And, you know, trees, as far as I know, just having trees in life is the most efficient way to transform CO2 in carbon. I mean, you can see it. Just take a log of tree and burn it and look at it, you know, when it's a black piece of charcoal, when it's a piece of coal, that's the amount of carbon that a tree has been breathing into from the air into a solid form.
Hey, Ted Kaczynski, I should send him my little videos that I'm watching. I'm sure he would like it.
Ted Kaczynski may be dying very soon, so if you want to do it quick.
Maybe he can do a little garden in the jail.
A little garden in the jail?
Yes.
Why not?
Maybe I can send him some wood chips at the jail.
Wood chips. Oh my God, we are keeping these criminals alive and they are consuming O2 and breathing out CO2. Mama JF finding a way again to make them more ecological. How are you doing, people of the regular chat? If you would like to support the show, use the dollar button under the Odyssey chat. Make sure you enable your payment method if you want this button to be available. Alternatively, you can also use Entropy. The link to Entropy is in the description below. Someone sent a message on Entropy. Autoritista says, Johnny, I tried to recommend your book to some people and they brought up your court case. Your haters applied Quaker views on female individual dignity and I smacked them down. How is it going? Oh, well, yeah, someone who rejects a scientific idea on the basis of any considerations of ad hominem, including false ones from hit pieces, do not deserve knowledge. So, but thank you for owning them and destroying them and reminding them that adult females in the US have a constitutional right to suck scientific dicks. Another fake Americans are racist story. Oh my God, this one, I actually guessed the news on this one. If you've watched the show, I believe it was yesterday or 2 days ago. I think it was yesterday. Someone came to me yesterday and said, JF, have you looked at the Duke volleyball story? Someone got called a racial slur and it's making scandal in the media. And I was like, I have not read that story at all. But there is a hoax hate crime on a yearly basis at Duke University. And so my guess is that this one would be this year's hoax hate crime. Again and again, there are hoaxes coming out of the university system. And if you look at it from the whole of America perspective, it is dozens a year. So here we learn that the whole Duke volleyball story that led ESPN to be in support of this black volleyball player who got called a racial slur. Turns out this didn't happen. Will ESPN issue a retraction now that you've brought their network into it? So the police has been investigating this whole thing. It's a volleyball player who claims that a person in the audience from a certain section of the audience, the student section they call it, would have called her a racial slur. And meanwhile, a lot of people observed that during this match, some guy was taken by the police and gotten out of the volleyball match in the crowd. And the administrators of the university eventually said, "We found the racist. We have banned him from future event. We're sorry that this happened." But then the police investigates and realize, well, the guy never said a racist slur. The guy was a mentally ill person who was unhinged and was trying to, somehow in his mental health problems, he was trying to take contact with these volleyball players, maybe because he loved them, or I don't know, but he was like kind of obsessive about touching or talking to the volleyball players. But they have reviewed the cell phones that were filming the match. They have reviewed the videos. They have also noted that this guy never was present in the student section, because the alleged racial slur would have come from the student section. But now the university is confirming this guy that got out is not a student of ours. He was not in the student section. All of the video cameras catching the action that night showed that he was in a totally different part of the stadium. And the police, and now many students are coming out because they were in the student section and are saying, "We never heard a racial slur being said of the whole night. We just saw a guy get brought out of some other part of the stadium, brought out by the police, but we never heard any racial slur coming from that section." So it looks like we are faced here with a false claim, someone trying to elevate themselves in the victim status, another Jussie Smollett, and I called it in advance. I refuse to accept this news until we knew more. But now the police says the guy has not committed a hate crime, has not used a racial slur. The students around are saying we didn't hear a racial slur. It looks like there was no racial slur. So again, an invented racist. The big tech purge of the truth continues. Google just removed World Net Daily, the first online conservative news site, from its search engine. Look what happens when you click on WND from Google's search engine. Warning: visiting this website may harm your computer. And then, yet they report that no unsafe content was found. So basically, they have put WND on their blacklist. WND will no more be featured on Google. Purely a conservative, very, very bland, right-wing, center-right outlet that was just covering stories that matter to the right wing. Absolutely ridiculous. Purge of the truth, media stunned by Google's vicious action against WND. This file is so dangerous, Chrome has blocked it. Big tech, the political establishment, the United Nations, and the World Economic Forum are cohesively endeavoring to implement the Great Reset agenda and usher in a new world order. This agenda can only be achieved by making the conservative, Christian, and pro-American paradigms obsolete and decimating public awareness by barring access to the truth. Readers who search for WND on Google are now directed to a page that issues an advisory when they click on the news site from the text giant's search engine. It's time we get this cartel undermined. It's time that we get an intervention from the federal government on the basis of the development of a monopoly. Nicholas Petris is hearing audio crackling. I tried lowering a little bit the gain, maybe output, maybe play with the ratio. I don't know. Lappitop says audio is fine for me. I know that I was maxing out the level, so maybe when I was speaking a little louder, you may have heard some crackling. Hopefully now it's gone. We'll see with the new settings. Western allies led by UK's Boris Johnson sabotage tentative Ukraine-Russia peace deal in April. Well, that's not surprising. I've said it. Clearly, when I see the behavior of America and of all of the Western nations, they don't want a peace deal. So they're pushing for this war to continue forever. So I'm not surprised that there were active tentative to do so. Thomas says, yeah, you're not clipping here, and I have pro level audio here. Ariel Sorez says it may have subsided by now. Yeah, I just lowered a little bit, and normally when you lower, you know, if you were reaching the peak, maybe sometimes now I shouldn't be reaching it. Trudeau government to give $100 million to LGBT groups across Canada. Oh my God. It will suck to be in Canada. You're going to have all these LGBT people in all of the little villages of Canada. Hey, we're here to say everyone is welcome. They're going to be at freaking local barbecues and everywhere. Holy shit. $100 million is a lot of money. It is enough money to get LGBT cheerleaders in the whole of the country for the next 50 years in every single village, in every single little barbecue, in every single public activity. This is what $100 million can do, and it's what it will do. They will impose this on everyone. Can't we have a little local activity where we don't get past these pamphlets? I mean, I don't want to give too much details, but me and Mama JF, we were chilling at a place. Just local activity, corn, hot dog, everything. And it's like, and someone is like, hey, would you guys like to take a picture with me? And Mama JF was like, sure, why shouldn't we take a picture with you? And I see the guy had a little, I don't know how you would call this, but he had a little strip, like these pageant queen winners. He had a little strip like this, and it was the LGBT rainbow. And I was like, Mama JF, I don't think we want to be in this picture. Because as it turns out, it was one of these funded activities from the government so that this guy can take the picture and say, see, all these people accept to be backing the openness of the LGBT community. Mama JF is here. What's up?
Oh, yes, I remember. He even wanted to come to our house, huh?
Yeah.
What would he have done if he would have come to our house? He would have done some propaganda.
Yeah, basically. He wanted to come to our house to welcome us. And I was like, no, we don't need this. But basically what he would have done is he would have said, so are you guys open about different sexual practices? Because there are different people. Not everyone is hetero, you know? These guys are just paid for it. $100 million. Of course, it's going to lead to your local LGBT flag bearer.
Oh my God, are you kidding me? That guy, everybody who come here. Oh my God. Hey, also, you know another thing they pay for?
What?
Hey, when I was in Montreal, I talked to the transgender people.
Oh yeah.
And they say they help me. Because I don't know why I was talking about them. I said I would like to get laser to get all my hair removed from my legs and everything.
Because you don't identify as a hair person.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it's so annoying. You always have to remove it. Oh my God. No, I don't know why I said that, but anyway, and they said, oh, us, we can have this paid by the government, all laser, everything. I was like, what? Like, why they don't pay this for me? I want to look like a woman too.
Okay, I see. So if they pay sex gender surgery, you would want them to pay your epilation laser too.
Why?
That makes sense. That makes sense. I mean, if we're going to pay it, let's pay everything. Thank you, Mama JF.
It's crazy.
Yes. Sliced Bread says, Jeff, why are you ever consenting to random people taking pics with you and Mama? I'm surprised based on your ultra-private way of life. No, I mean, that's the point. The thing is, already when I saw him take his photograph machine out, I was like, no, no, Mama JF. No, no, no. And as I was about to stop Mama JF, because Mama JF needs to be guided by the male patriarch of the family. So I was about to play my role as a male patriarch in front of this obvious introduction in my family by another agent with a penis. And I see the whole rainbow thing. It was relatively subtle because it was disguised as some other things. It was not like the whole LGBT flag on his chest. It was more like, oh, here's a bandlet, and oh, here's a little rainbow on the bandlet. And then there was something like, we are welcoming, or something like this written on it. And then just before I was even about to stop Mama Jeff, just because, no, we don't take pictures precisely. I realized, holy shit, this is not a regular picture, which I would already object to. This is a picture to be included in the count of pro-LGBT people by some local pro-LGBT organization. I mean, the problem is these guys go to see their bosses in the state apparatus of grant funding, of welcoming and stuff. And then they can say, oh, look, I photographed 30 people. We served hot dogs to 30 pro-LGBT people at the local park today. And then they get funded for this. The problem is you just took a local activity where people were naively going, but then you're turning it into your thing, into your political fight. Absolutely take issue with this. Grapes Coda says, then you find that he wants you to be his patriarch, JF. No, he wouldn't have wanted. He would have probably been against the patriarchy, this guy. But it was so subtle because it came dressed as something else than pro-LGBT stuff. It came as, oh yeah, we're welcoming. Oh yeah, oh you're here. You're here eating hot dogs. Well, have you been welcomed? Because we're welcoming. Don't you want me to go to your house and welcome you? And I was like, holy shit, what the fuck is that? This guy is bugged or something. I've never... You want to welcome me? I'm born in this country, motherfucker. Donald J. Trump, congratulations to the many FBI and DOJ whistleblowers who have flooded the offices of our senators and congressmen / women with really bad things to say about what is going on. This is the time, after many years of lawbreaking and unfairness, to clean things up. All things for a reason. Drain the swamp. So now the con man special agent of the FBI has announced, right after getting caught rigging the election and many other things, getting blasted by his bosses, that it would be a wonderful time for him to retire. What damage he has done to our nation. Look at us, we have become strictly third world. So Trump is, of course, continuing his spree of complaining against the FBI raid. I've not been following the details, but it's been getting some coverage. This is a contrasting image. Very interesting. Dissident Dalmatian was posting a glimpse of a future without white people. That's an article that we've reviewed here on the show, The Last White Man, blah, blah, blah. And then you get the Guardian article, if white people were still here, this wouldn't happen. The majority black town flooded with sewage. Is your whiteness free future feeling like it like you thought it would? Are you enjoying it yet? Because yeah, you do need a bunch of white people to operate a sewage, or if there's no white people around you to operate the sewage system, you need to operate it yourself. This is what's so funny about this hate of whites, is that I just wish that we left people who hate white people to themselves, to their own devices. You go ahead and build your own cities, you go ahead and develop property and develop the rule of law and develop politics and develop even just a functional society that can bring food to you. Good luck. Charles Garrity says the picture would be photoshopped with JF. Okay, so Fanatical Socialist had sent a super chat, $14. Thank you so much. He says, can you explain the origin of heterosexual evolution strategy, pre-human even, and its advantages? Oh my God, absolutely. I mean, I've said it many times. If you want to, I make the best case for it in explaining to Vox Day how wrong he is when he tries to compare the fixation rate of bacteria to sexual species. The great advantage of sexual selection, you know what I have? I have written a text about it on Quora. Because someone was asking on Quora, what is the advantage of meiosis? So let me read, because I could try to summarize, but I think it would never be done better than this text, which I've taken great effort at writing. So I will also share the link in the description below at the end of the show. You would have access to this link if you want to read it. Meiosis is one. So meiosis basically is the fact that we are a species with sperm and egg. And a species with sperm and egg doesn't have to be human. And in fact, heterosexual sex has pre-existed humans by maybe a billion years, maybe more. Meiosis is one of the most fascinating things that ever happened to our ancestors, of all the very fascinating things that happened to them. Meiosis is the process that makes us sexual species, species that bear two copies of their genome and pass only one to their offspring, the other copy coming from a sexual partner. Not only do you pass just half of your genes, the particular half that you pass to each offspring is shuffled through various mechanisms, including the genesis of the gametes and something called crossover, a molecular operation in which genes from one of your chromosomes jump to associate with your partner's chromosome and vice versa. So shuffling has been important for our genetic evolution. The evolutionary significance of meiosis is major and multifaceted. Without meiosis, you get bacteria, but we don't know that you'd get mushrooms, plants, and animals. I personally believe you wouldn't. I believe that of all the planets hosting life out there, only those where sexual selection develops come to see life forms as complex as ours. The reason I believe this is... The reason I believe that is that most of the things we care about as complex in life are known or believed to be due largely to sexual selection. From flowers that court bees to carry their seed, to peacock tails, to your ability to pull a joke at the right moment in order to charm a sexual partner. Meiosis is often thought of as a radical accelerator of evolution. Compare two life forms evolving. One is bacteria-like and doesn't have meiosis. One is human-like and has meiosis. Suppose that a change in the environment renders a necessary nutrient for these two life forms suddenly very rare. How do our two life forms evolve in response to this change? Our bacteria, on the one hand, has no choice. It must do whatever it needs to find whatever amounts of this nutrient it can find, even if not optimal in its search. It will attempt to produce some copies of itself, even if that means carrying imperfect genes that are not quite as good to handle this new environment as other competing bacteria would be. It would take thousands of generations before the evolutionary disadvantage shows in full, leading the unfit bacteria to slowly disappear. The important thing is that the bacteria doesn't have a way of getting rid of its bad genes while reproducing. For the bacteria, it's all or nothing. Either she survives and is stuck with her good and bad genes, or she dies, in which case evolution still goes on for the surviving bacteria, but not those that died. Non-meiotic evolution is painful, long, and wasteful. It waits for the right mutation to happen to the right bacteria. Compare this to the same nutrient scarcity problem applied to our sexual species. A female goes to a place where males are available. 99% of the males look poor, malnourished, and feeble. Nutrient scarcity has been hitting hard. She chooses a male among the 1% who look more healthy and immediately reproduces with him. By doing so, she has found the male most capable of gathering our rare nutrient, and she may not even know it. In a single generation, she has solved the problem that the bacteria might take thousands of generations to solve. She has evolved without even having to wait for natural selection to punish her children. This is allowed because of sexual selection and the gene reassortment that occurs in it. Meiotic evolution is quicker. It allows genes to find the right partners to combine with without going through the very slow process of natural selection as it applies to bacterial mutations. Why wait for the right mutation when you can just pick the sexual partner that happens to already carry it? Meiotic evolution has its own wasteful aspects. From peacock tails to Ferraris, the level of investment males will make to court a female can become quite ridiculous. But fundamentally, meiosis allows the genes not to be bound by life or death contract within a single organism, but rather get an opportunity to team up with other, better genes on every generation. Think of the difference between a fixed-rate mortgage and one that can be renegotiated every 5 years. So that's what it is. Meiosis, sex, heterosexuality, is renegotiatable mortgages for life. That is, it is a deal in which the genes can renegotiate who they partner with, when in fact bacteria cannot do this. I know that DK Shadow says meplasmids. Even meplasmids, I mean, is not enough, and it's not fair, and it's really the genes that end up evolving as plasmid that get out of the bacteria to get into another one end up being viral, because by nature they are escapist. They run away. They don't care about killing the organism that they run from. Whereas meiotic evolution is a stable way to make genetic reassortment constant, obligatory, and fair for all the genes. And that puts you in a situation where suddenly the genes that can be innovative don't have to evacuate the genome as a plasmid and flee to another organism. They can develop innovation, and their measure of the importance of that innovation in evolution will be by how much they can serve the organism. But instead of being viral, they end up being constructive contributors to the organism. So that's why meiosis is good. It's because you don't even have to wait to develop a genetic technique to gather the to face a new environment. You can just pick whoever has survived that environment, and you already have a man of genetic quality in choosing a good partner. You can see meiosis in so many ways. One of the ways you can, and it's not a contradictory ways with what I've just said. It's an alternative lens that you can also put on it. Imagine that you were a life form, neither a male nor a female. Imagine that the environment was so changing and so complex that your life form could benefit from splitting in two for a moment to test the environment here and test the environment here to ensure that when you get back together, when the sperm comes back to fertilize the egg, that this sperm has survived through a lot of shit and this egg has survived through a lot of shit. That evolution would be much faster than an evolution in which you have to try everything you need to survive, but with your bad genes and with your good genes. And then eventually what that would inevitably lead to is that the sum of the accumulated genetic knowledge gets lost, because bacteria have little ways or no ways to communicate genetic knowledge to other organisms, plasmids being an exception. So that's my answer to your super chat fanatical socialist. White has sent $21. He says, great show tonight. Thank you so much to White for supporting the show. And let me tell you, we've been spending a great month, me and Mama JF, getting a lot of red tape resolved with the government and companies and stuff. And White has made this month a very... very profitable month. So thank you so much, because we're rolling in finances. We are super healthy. We are there. There is no sign that this show will ever stop in the coming years. We are rolling on gold. Thanks a lot to the generosity of the people watching this show, including White, who's been a very white sponsor. Some random bloke sends a super chat. He says, hey, JF, did you see that Canada recently passed Holocaust denial laws similar to Europe, and you can get 2 years jail for it? Yeah, I've seen this. Someone sent a link to it, and I've just quickly commented on it. But basically what Canada has done is they made a little amendment to the hate speech laws, and they just specify, oh, yeah, by the way, denying the Holocaust is this crime. So the crime of hate speech already existed, but they've just specified denying the Holocaust, that is saying that the Holocaust has not happened, is this crime which already existed, but now we're just specifying that this is an instance of it. So what do I have to say about this? I can't say anything. DOJ likely to wait past midterms to reveal any Trump charges. This is so hilarious, this news item, because the DOJ has announced that it would wait after the midterm elections to reveal whether they're going to bring any charges against former President Donald Trump, on the basis that, you know, we have a long-standing policy that bars disclosures that would impact elections. But the FBI, the DOJ, have never been respecting this rule. They've always been revealing after the election when it's a Republican, or when it's something that could damage the Democrats. And they've been revealing before if it's something that can damage the right. But the fact that they would say this and invoke this rule, which they violated again and again in the last few decades, tells me that probably they don't want to charge Trump. Because if they were charging Trump, they would announce it now. And they would say, oh, well, it's a matter of public interest. By the way, Trump is not in the midterm election. So technically, they could announce something and say, well, we're suing Trump. We're not suing conservative Republicans. And but what this tells me is they have created a cloud over the head of Trump, and they just want to extend that cloud as long as possible. And then what we're going to have probably after the midterms is them saying, oh yeah, we can't sue. There are no facts that suggest that it was intentional hiding of documents, so we will cancel all charges. DOJ bans officials from all partisan political events amid allegations of bias. That's the DOJ trying to hide their bias. Too little, too late. And anyways, I'm not worried about FBI agents cheering Hillary Clinton and being at a Democrat convention and say, oh yeah, I love you, Hillary. That is my last concern. The problem is the inherent bias that they put in their work. The problem is that by banning them to participate to political events, you're making the bias an even more hidden thing. You are now asking the Democrat agents within the DOJ and FBI to be acting in the dark, which is what they love to do anyways. So this won't resolve anything. The inherent bias of this intelligence and legal community will be pursued, but it will be pursued away from public eyes. Andrew Tarba says, liberalism is a mental disorder. California is poised to phase out sales of new gas-powered cars, August 25. Breaking, on August 31st, California Power Grid declares flex alert, urges residents not to charge electric vehicles. Bravo, California. You have demonstrated the unsustainability of getting everyone on electric cars when we can't even afford to charge when 1% of people own electric cars. Can you imagine if everyone had an electric car? We're already shutting down electrical networks across cities. And we're saying to people, you can't charge your electric car. Imagine when everyone has an electric car. Biden administration has drained the U.S. strategic petroleum reserve to its lowest level since 1984. Holy shit, I'm born in 1984. 1984, the petroleum reserve of the U.S. grows here, and then Biden comes in and sells everything. Holy shit, that's why gasoline has a couple of cents less on my bill. But what will happen when this petroleum reserve runs out? We're going to be back to big prices. In 2024, Los Angeles will vote on forcing hotels to house the homeless. So they will make a system where anyone operating an hotel, by something like by 2 p.m. each day, must send a notice to the government saying how many rooms are available at the hotel that night. And then the government will designate a bunch of homeless people to go fill these hotel rooms, and the hotel will be bound by law to accept a civil penalty of $500 for each day that each individual or family was unlawfully denied lodging. And the government will develop a measure that they call fair market rate. And the hotel will have to accept the amount determined by the government to be the fair payment for this night of hosting a homeless. This will go wrong in so many ways. First, the fact that homeless people, some of them are out there because they have chosen so. Some of them are out there because they have mental disorder. Some of them are out there and are unable to live in society. They will come to ruin. Some of them will come to ruin the hotels, the experience for the other guests. Some of them may destroy and cause criminality problems within the hotel. And on top of it, who knows what the government will determine is the fair market rate. And this is different for every hotel. There's a bunch of hotels who maybe would be happy to get $85 a night, but there are some hotels who just cannot sustain themselves at $85 a night, especially not if you get the 85 and you get all of the problems associated with homelessness to deal with. And so hopefully, I don't care what happens to California and LA. Hopefully California gets what they deserve and what they vote for. Mama JF says there's going to be Mama JF. The prediction of Mama JF has been censored. Oh my God, it's not going well for Alec Baldwin. Not only is he on the hook for potentially killing someone with a gun that police say he may have fired, he may have pulled the trigger, but now he gets sued because of a social media post he did about a fallen Marine from the Afghanistan withdrawal. And somehow Alec Baldwin digged into the history of this fallen Marine and found out that his sister was an insurrectionist who had participated to some protest on January 6th. It's not going well for Alec. Holy shit. This guy will have $0 coming soon. Avoid charging electric vehicles. California grid operator warns of blackouts, urges energy conservation. So now you have not only were you highly pressured in buying these electric vehicles, but on top of it, you cannot use them because you can't charge, because we ask you to care about the environment. You care about the environment because you've bought an electric vehicle. We're going to ask you to care a little more and not charge your electric vehicle. Is that an electric vehicle at this point? Can it be fairly called a vehicle if you can't use it to do transportation? EU declares energy crisis emergency. The US will not be immune. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen declares an energy emergency. The crisis will not be contained to Europe. Skyrocketing prices, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, we know it's a problem, but it's a problem that you guys have caused. Bring back Trump. Bring back fairness and bring back openness to development, and you're not going to have these problems. There's going to be companies wanting to pump fuel. And also, you know, stop the oppression of Russia. If you resolve all that I've just said in the last 30 seconds, if you do all this, the fuel price will be back to its normal. Someone shared this on the Discord. Gorbachev, the last leader of the Soviet Empire, was featured in a Pizza Hut commercial. I didn't know this. It's very weird. I don't understand what's the context of this. What's the context of this TV spot for Pizza Hut involving Gorbachev? that's Gorbachev. He's going to a Pizza Hut. And then people in the restaurant are starting to argue politically.
Да благодаря ему у нас новые возможности.
Это из-за него у нас политическая нестабильность.
Да благодаря ему.
So they're arguing around, we have freedom because of him, we have instability because of him. It's basically a discussion between a young capitalist revolutionary in Russia and a old, more conservative communist. And then eventually the whole conflict is resolved by the woman who says, because of him, we have Pizza Hut. So they're saying we have Pizza Hut because he led to the fall of the Soviet Empire, therefore capitalism was able to enter Russia, therefore we now have Pizza Hut because of Gorbachev. That's what I can understand. But I can't imagine this happening today with corporations being so careful, so woke. I think they wouldn't take the risk of having a figure that has led an empire in one of their commercials. ADL-led big tech firm runs pro-migrant PSYOP in Poland. Google subsidiary Jigsaw will blanket the nation with psychological ads meant to inoculate them against patriotism. Well, hopefully this kind of shit will not penetrate Poland. Hopefully, when the more you go east in Europe, the more you will have a cultural resistance. I don't know that it is the case, but I hope that you'll get some kind of cultural resistance that will reject the wokeness. But they may succeed, who knows, if they really invest much money. And it seems to be the next target, you know, all these countries in Eastern Europe, it seems to be the next target of the globalists to make them, to put their migration policy in their throat against their will. Hopefully they don't repeat the errors of America and of Western Europe. That was it for tonight, boys. I was happy to speak with all of you. Autoritista was on Entropy, was saying, you still in Canada or did you leave? I'm still in Canada, but I have left for a very distant region, and we live, me and Mama JF, a secluded lifestyle. A family lifestyle, away from civilization, away from big cities, which is why, like yesterday and today, we had to go to offices and fill out forms and papers. And for this, we have to drive many hours because we live distantly from any big corporations and any big governmental agencies. And we really love life here. So yes, we live in northern Canada in an undisclosed location, and we are facing the strong winters, but they are so much more pleasant to deal with than the freaking governmental agencies and the civilization and the people and the neighbors. And it's so preferable to know what you're fighting against, because when you're fighting against leftism and hateful neighbors and people who want to know everything and control everything about your life and your land, you don't know what you're fighting against. They will change, they will use all the most vicious tactics. But when you fight against the cold of the winter and the forces of nature, then you know what you're fighting against, and it's much easier to live then. Much love. See you all tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm.